everybody ready?
Recording in progress.
I'll call to order this regular session of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, and I'll ask Councilmember Borbeau to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Please stand if you're able and join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Here.
Councilmember Daris.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Well, if for those of you attending here in person tonight, welcome. If you are on the Zoom webinar, if you're going to call in, if you're on KPRL, YouTube, all the different places you can catch this meeting, we're glad you're here with us this evening. If you would like to speak by phone during the time that's set aside for community forum or for public comment on any of the items on the agenda, you can do so by calling the following number. That is 669-900-6833. That is 669-900-6833. And when you call in, use the meeting ID 889-2347-9018. Again, meeting ID 889-2347-9018. When you call in, please let us know what item you would like to speak on. And if you have access to the agenda, all of that information is on the front page of the agenda, and you can find that at atascadero.org. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll so move.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Daris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent calendar. The consent calendar contains items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff and can be approved in one motion unless there's a member of the public or a council wishing to pull an item for further discussion. So I will look to my colleagues. Anyone wishing to? No? Any member of the public wishing to pull an item on the consent calendar? Looking into the webinar as well, and I don't see anyone on the phone. Is that correct, Luke? Okay. All right. Seeing none, I will bring that back and ask for a motion.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Daris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Daris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We are now on to updates from our city manager, and who will be doing that for us this evening? All right. Ms. Christensen, take it away.
Thank you. I just wanted, thank you for the opportunity to fill in today. Mr. Lewis is with our zoo director. He's actually at the annual Association of Zoos and Aquariums conference this week. As you know, we are coming up for accreditation at the zoo, and so they're there, and Mr. Lewis is really working on ways to make the zoo more interesting and more financially viable. And speaking of the zoo, just this Saturday, we had Brew at the Zoo Take Two, which was a success with over 400 in attendance, along with 25 food and adult beverage vendors, live music with Riftide and soloist Chris Belland, and entertainment by DJ Rama, hosting the costume, dance, and hula hoop contests. Event goers enjoyed all of the fun, plus a variety of raffle prizes were hosted by the Friends of the Charles Paddock Zoo, with all of the proceeds for the raffle, as well as the event to support the animals. As we look to 2024, please mark your calendar for the first Saturday after Labor Day in September for the new Brew at the Zoo date, September 7th, 2024. This weekend was also Sheriff's Family Day at the Ranch. This is a great family event that's celebrated annually, promoting and educating the public on law enforcement, and it's an opportunity to become familiar with the county's first responder agencies. The City of Atascadero Police Department had great representation with Interim Police Chief Joe Allen and a handful of employees manning the booth, along with our lead records technician Kate Grogan taking care of the face painting. The 55 Chevy was also on hand, and one of our patrol cars. It was a great event and was very well attended. Upcoming is a very fun weekend with football leading the way. Not only do the Greyhounds have a game on Friday, but Cal Poly football is hosting a Tascadero Day on Saturday, September 6th, starting at 5 p.m. at the Spano Stadium. The game starts again at 5 p.m., but fans are encouraged to come early to enjoy the pregame tailgate. Plus, our own Mayor Moreno, will be announcing at the game, along with a halftime performance by the Atascadero Middle and High School cheer team. A perfect opportunity to cheer on the Mustangs and represent the city of Atascadero. To take advantage of the special offer, go to visitatascadero.com and click on events. Game tickets are free, but you do have to register, and they're only available while supplies last. Plan to bring your wallet for food and memorabilia, plus event parking is $15. I do want to update on some projects that we have in the city. First, the downtown pavement project. So as part of the city council's key priorities, the council has approved the downtown district pavement rehabilitation project. And this is a project that includes upgraded curb ramps, improved street surfacing, and striping throughout the downtown. This Thursday, the city will be hosting a town hall meeting for downtown businesses, residents, and property owners to learn more about the project. There will be two meeting times, one at 8:15 a.m. and one at 6 p.m. at the Ambrosia Room at the Carlton. And that's again this Thursday, September 14th at 8:15 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. This town hall meeting is going to provide an opportunity for everyone to learn about the project, what will be taking place throughout the project, and the project timeline. We will be working closely, I just want everyone to know, we will be working closely with the contractor on the construction schedule throughout the downtown business area, so that work's done efficiently and quickly during a key time of year for the retailers. We'll also work to mitigate any impacts to businesses and avoid key events and holiday shopping on popular streets like Entrada. In addition, there'll be outgoing communication to stakeholders with informational handouts as well as social media posts. And there is a dedicated webpage where there will be project updates, and that the short URL is atascadero.org/downtownpaving, and that's going to include construction timelines and street locations. And we'll also have, throughout the downtown, we'll have some signage that will have a QR code that you'll be able to scan that'll get you directly to the website. The Atascadero Lake Park Pier and Pathway Project, that's a lot of P's today, is also underway. That construction started today, and for that project, the city was actually awarded $178,000 in grant funding as part of Proposition 68. That's the California Drought, Water, Parks, Climate, Coastal Protection, and Outdoor Access for All Act. Grant funding will assist with the replacement of the pier railing, deck boards, concrete sidewalk and curb, a new stairway with handrails, and an ADA-compliant ramp from the asphalt pathway, that's P's are hard today, behind the upper restrooms to the new sidewalk near the boathouse entrance. Project's part of additional efforts to improve park facilities, as again part of council's key priorities identified in the 2023-25 budget. Construction will occur Monday through Friday and is expected to be completed by the middle of October. Not to worry though, access to Mr. Putter's boathouse will still be available and maintained during construction and on the weekends. And finally, I just want to remind everyone of the Celebration of Life tribute to Paso Robles Mayor Steve Martin. Now through September 26th, the city is honoring Mayor Martin with a tribute in the reception area at City Hall, and the public is invited and encouraged to come in and sign the memory book or leave a card. It provides, this tribute provides the opportunity for residents, friends, work associates, and anyone who had the pleasure of working with Mayor Martin during his time here in Atascadero to send regards to the family. The memory book and items collected will be brought to the Martin family on September 26th. And we also do have it up here tonight in the council chambers for those interested in signing it. And that's all I have for updates. And if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
I was just going to point out, Laura, the slide was correct regarding the Cal Poly thing, but I think you verbally said September 6th. And it's September 16th, of course.
Apologies, yes, it is September 16th, this Saturday, yes.
Just in case anybody's listening and not reading.
And I want to thank our staff for putting together this beautiful tribute to Mayor Martin. It's been a whole month almost a whole month since his passing, and this is really the first time we've met publicly. And I know I've heard from so many of you in the community, and so many of you were shocked and incredibly saddened. And I'm grateful that we have this opportunity to remember him in this way. And I would ask that we just take a moment of silence right now to remember a good man. Thank you. Are there any other questions of City Manager's report? All right, thank you. We will move on to community forum. This is the portion of our meeting that is reserved for persons wishing to speak to the council on something that's not on the agenda this evening, but over which council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we allow a total of 30 minutes for community forum. We do ask that you state your name for the record. Anything brought up tonight cannot become a subject of discussion for the council, but we do our best to try to triage to, if there are questions, to be able to get you answers, whether tonight, later on. So please come on forward, first speaker.
Thank you. My name is Richard Mullen. I live here in Atascadero, and I wanted to say thank you for at least beginning the striping on Highway 41 El Camino. I noticed Caltrans has striped so far. I'm hoping that the city will encourage them to come back and at least put on the pavement the northbound lane only, so we don't have that two right-hand turn lanes, people going from the far right hand and then trying to go back towards El Camino. The second thing I wanted to thank the council for was I will no longer refer to traffic way entry as the pigeon poop entry into downtown Atascadero. I noticed that Caltrans took about a week to go through there and put the diagonals up there and some spikes to keep the pigeons out of there. So I appreciate that the city has pigeoned Caltrans to get that work done finally. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Ted Mort. I am pastor of Atascadero Gospel Chapel, and I'm not here on behalf of our church, although I would say that our congregation really appreciates all of you council members and all that you do for our city. But I am also the president of the board for Oakview Village. Most people say, what is Oakview Village? Well, if I say formerly Atascadero Christian Home, you go, oh, okay. A couple years ago, we closed down our assisted living facility. A lot of people thought we closed completely. We didn't. There are still independent residents there, and we closed down to plan for a new launch of a new business model, new buildings, and we are very excited. Next month, October 2nd, we will be having a grand opening, showing off some new buildings, talking about our new vision for caring for seniors. And we will, before we get out of here, we have invitations for all you council members to attend a dinner that we have there. And I would like to introduce Gary Taylor, who is our CEO, and he might have something to say.
Hi, my name is Gary Taylor. I'm the CEO at Oakview Village. And for 2 years, we've been working on transforming Atascadero Christian Community into a viable ministry for the city of Atascadero and the community to serve senior citizens for the next century. And we're excited to unveil that product to you on October 2nd. And I have 5 invitations to our gala for the council members and for our mayor, and also a little packet of information to go along with it. I'm so excited about what Oakview has to do with Atascadero. We've been here since 1957, serving this community, and most of that has been very quiet, humble service to a marginalized group of individuals in our community. But that group is growing. Every day, senior citizens are noted as the fastest growing population segment in the country. And we are doing something at Oakview that not only places us back on the map, but there is no place in California that is going to be able to produce what we're producing. This is the wave of the future, and I'm so grateful for the trustees who had the vision to stand behind me as we forged ahead in this building program that has taken about the last 8 months. And this is just the first phase of three phases, and we're excited about what is happening. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Welcome to our next speaker.
Thank you. Gary Kirkland from, I live on Portola Road. I don't know if you need the address. You can look it up, I think. What I'm here to talk about is Assembly Bill, it's Assembly Constitutional Amendment 1, and it's called ACA 1, and then there's Assembly Constitutional Amendment 13. And both these bills, actually it's passed the Assembly now, and it goes to the Senate on 15th, whatever day that is. This is the 12th of Thursday. So time is short. What these two bills are trying to do is gut Prop 13. So if you see people here, most of them are not going to be able to live here much longer because their property taxes will be much higher than their mortgages if they have one, and they'll have to move out. This bill will throw senior citizens and those on fixed incomes out into the street if it passes. Now, it's a constitutional amendment, two of them. So it'll go on the ballot probably in September of next year, probably. And we'll get to vote on it. But if it passes, which it may, property taxes for almost everyone will at least double. And their property taxes will be more than their mortgages. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is I'm going to urge everyone, including the city council, to contact state legislators and tell them to vote no. You have to contact senators now. Tell them to vote no. And if that doesn't work, contact the governor and tell them not to sign the legislation. The Senate and the Assembly have for years tried to gut Prop 13. Government never has enough money, and they never learn to live in their means. They always try to increase their means. When Proposition 13 passed in 1978, there were many people in this state who were having to move out of the state or move into an apartment. They'd lose their homes, lose their ranches, and that's going to happen again. If local governments can raise taxes, they want to lower it to a 55% bill, and ACA 13 will make it very difficult for anyone to put any tax relief or tax prevention bill on the Constitution. That's what ACA 13 is for. And I urge everyone to contact the state senate. John Laird is our state senator. And contact him. You can look up his number and tell him to vote no on ACA 13. On a second note related, although it may be on the agenda, I'm not sure, is low-income housing on the agenda tonight? And I'll wait to talk about that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin, resident here of this wonderful city and business owner. hope everybody's had a pretty good summer, and I know we've kind of been a little quiet. I've been accused of being too quiet on our council, so I'm going to step it up a little bit tonight, so here you go.
Who accused you of being too quiet?
You have residents that have been really on my doorstep. So with that being said, for construction project, road projects and such that are in the city, a lot of times delineators are used. Those are those long stanchions, and they typically are being put out with 7 or 11 pound bases on the bottom. We've brought this up before. They're not made to be tied, and people tie caution tape to them or whatever, and when the wind blows, they go everywhere. So I'm asking our council and our director of public works to start considering maybe double basing them so they stay put rather than being knocked over in the windstorms that we have daily. That has been brought up before, but I think it's time to reconsider that again. Thank you. Secondly, about 2 years ago, I brought up the amount of time and labor that we're putting into signs for farmers market. We still do not have signs on, permanent signs on our light fixtures down here in Sunken Gardens. We're putting delineators out every week and picking them up. That costs our city money. By state statute and parking laws, you can put signs up and say within 100 feet of each sign, and that's legal for tow zones and everything else, and I think we need to look at that. We are taking resources, valuable resources, away from our city, and we're normally very good at making things easier. So I think that's something we should look at. I got poked by a few people, including my neighbors, the last few days on the intersection at Del Rio and 101 Del Camino. Can we have a timeline of when we're closing that intersection, please, at night and getting that fixed? It is getting worse and worse, and this is the time to do it before the rainstorms hit. That would be great. And then to the downtown infrastructure project that everybody's going to be redoing, I still hope that we are really looking at putting some form of pickup zones in the downtown. So it's 20-minute parking or whatever. We can worry about enforcement down the line, but we need to be able to pick up stuff and go and not have parking totally taken up. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak for Community Forum? All right, I think we've got one individual in the Zoom room, but I don't see a hand raised. If you want to raise your hand, feel free, but I'm thinking not. I don't see anyone on the phone. So I'm going to go ahead and close Community Forum and bring that back to the part. All right, so... yes, Mr. Mullen, we did a lot of work with Caltrans, and very glad that's a lot of times we need to rely on them for things, and they're not always as timely as we want. They have a lot on their plate, and just grateful that this has happened. And I don't know if I can get used to Oakview Village. I'm used to a Atascadero Christian home for so many years. My mother-in-law lived there for a number of years, about eight years. And so it'll be hard to get used to a different name, but I will make that work. So looking forward to seeing what they've got going. And then, Mr. Oslin, I would ask our director of public works just the those delineators and maybe having a heavier base and the Del Rio 101 and when we might see that getting fixed.
So the thank you, Mayor Moreno. Good questions. I feel like I was blessed tonight by Mr. Oslin's attention. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Anyways, all good things. The delineator bases, I think he's referring to like special events or whatever, maybe when they get blown over, because there was quite a few during cruise night and that weekend that there's a windstorm or a lot of wind that weekend that blew them all over onto the parking stalls, and we usually don't have guys come in on the weekend to pick those up, so they usually get them on Monday, but we'll look at that and see if we can maybe stabilize those a little bit better. The Del Rio and 101, Del Rio's, we've had some staff shortages this year, and then when we did look to Caltrans to do that, they said no, not until after the fair. And then we've just kind of been busy, so we need to get back at that. Our intention is to get that shaped up before wintertime, mm-hmm. and before the rains come. So it is kind of a rough ride, and with the 101 Del Rio project, we'll be redoing that section of road down to Monterey. So I think that was it, wasn't it?
That was it, yes. So, I mean, the farmer's market parking signs, but that's something.
Farmer's market, that's funny he brings it up, because I'm looking at signs this week to actually order from a local sign vendor and put those up. So we'll be putting those on the street sign or the street lights along the park there, mm-hmm. and then along the sidewalk on East Mall as well. And I'll, Terry will be happy to hear this. We'll say farmer's market on Wednesday, so we'll do some advertising for it too.
Excellent.
So it's a win-win.
Terry's happy. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Okay. Well, thank you all of you who came to speak. We always appreciate public input. And we are now moving on to our one public hearing of the night, and this is Affordable Housing Development Impact Fee Deferral Policy. And I believe online, oh, no, he's right over there. I hadn't looked in your direction all night, Director Dunsmore. I thought maybe you were online. Good evening, and I will turn it over to you, sir.
Good evening, Mayor, and good evening, Council. If you recall, back in April, we had a nice discussion about this affordable housing program incentive. It's a implementation of our housing element, and now we're back actually to look at the actual program, look at the actual policy, look at the actual little change to our municipal code. And what we're talking about here is a deferment of development impact fees for qualifying affordable housing projects. And so tonight we're going to be recommending a policy for those fee deferrals for the qualifying projects, and then that minor amendment to our municipal code in Title III to at least accommodate that that program. So what is this program? It's a long-term low-interest loan, basically. It really, what it does, it completely defers the payment of development impact fees, including wastewater capacity charges, for these affordable housing projects. Now, where this would apply would be a residential housing project that has at least five units that are affordable in it. Now, I want to make a couple clarifications that aren't totally clear in your staff report tonight. I'm going to go through those in just a moment. But why are we doing this now? Well, first of all, we've got affordable housing developers that are seeking these deferment agreements in order to gain additional points towards their grant applications. We don't have a policy as to how to handle these. And again, it implements our housing element program that we have in our general plan. And here's that program right now. It's program 2E in our current general plan. It says provide, when possible, incentives such as expedited permit processing and what we're doing tonight, developer impact fee deferrals for units that are affordable to lower income households. So this is a direct implementation of that. Again, some clarification I want to add on eligible projects, and some of this may not be 100% clear in your staff report. We discussed this amongst our team in the past week or two. Your staff report does say a residential project with five or more residential units. The intent there was five or more affordable residential units that meet those low, very low, and extremely low categories. Another discussion has come up more recently, and this isn't clear in your report or the policy or program either, is should this apply to rental only or for sale units? And the reason we're questioning that now is if this was to apply to a for sale unit, we are concerned about, think about the change of ownership in the future that would occur and having to carry over that debt on a property throughout change of ownership might be problematic, not impossible to deal with, but definitely a lot easier on a one-owner rental project where it has a covenant recorded on that rental and someone's not selling that debt off. And although there would be a deed restriction, it's just one more thing to think about. We also have in here the project must be consistent with existing zoning. Now, another question has popped up along these lines. What if a project comes in on a state property, such as the Atascadero State Hospital property, where that superior agency does not have to comply with our current zoning? Should we allow it in that scenario? And that's a good discussion, I think, for council to have. Staff's recommending, yes, that we do have that exclusion in there. But generally, why we had that existing zoning caveat in there is because there's a lot of other state laws right now that are coming down the pipeline that essentially allow residential projects in commercial zones anywhere on privately owned properties. We wanted this incentive to apply solely to a real residential project in a residential zone that we anticipated to be developed with residential units through our general plan. The only exception being on some of these state-owned properties where they've surplus them out, such as the Atascadero State Hospital, where they may not follow our zoning, but I think it still should apply. So really, it's kind of a question for council tonight whether to add that caveat in. Then lastly, any of these projects that are eligible, the units that are eligible for the deferment would be deed restricted as low, very low, or extremely low income for a term of 55 years or more. And that 55-year term really comes from state law anyway. That's the set threshold that state has if a unit's going to be deed restricted as affordable and it's going to qualify for the other state benefits such as a density bonus. That's the term that they would have. So some of the terms, this would be something that they would need to request prior to us issuing construction permits. For example, when they come in for the review, they'd say, hey, at this project, we'd like to request this. We would only grant that following the recordation of the affordability covenant, and it should only apply to development impact fees and wastewater capacity charges. Now, a key thing to note, we don't collect development impact fees until a project is completed and ready to occupy. So there's time to work through the mechanics of this and the recordation of the affordability. None of that has to happen upon issuance of the construction permit. It happens at the end of that process. And then lastly, how does this actually work? What are the mechanics? It's a 17-year low-interest loan, payable in full, the conclusion of the term. Why 17 years? This is the minimum amount that some of the affordable housing developers have said will work for them. Real quick on the code update, this is a section, this is in Title 3, this is in our finance code of our municipal code. It basically says when fees shall be paid, and it says upon final inspection of the property and before occupancy. The proposal here is simply to add some language. It says unless an agreement to defer impact fees has been approved by the city for residential units that are affordable to low, very low, and or extremely low households. So just adding that caveat so it's recognized in the code. So in conclusion, this is a policy that would implement our housing element program. It's an effective tool that will help incentivize additional affordable units. It'll help us meet our regional housing needs allocation, our ARENA as they call it, which long-term actually helps us maintain local zoning control, because if we don't meet our ARENA long term, the state begins to take our local zoning control over, and that's where we fall into having to allow residential anywhere and everywhere. So what are the next steps? If we adopt a policy, which is the resolution that we have attached to your staff report, that becomes effective immediately. Now the code amendment is nice to have in there, but it's not mandated to have in there to allow this policy to go forward. But that does require we come back for a second reading, and then at 30 days after that, that would become effective. Now, there is other implementation items we have in our housing element. We may bring back those later on. We don't really have the staff time at the moment to work on those, and I think this is the one item we wanted to really get you this year on this incentive. I know we did a Nexus study. We did all that work on a potential of, you know, an impact fee program. That's kind of on idle right now unless we have further direction to move back with that. So for now, I'm going to pause there and be available to answer your questions.
Thank you, Director. Yes, I think that's the one that can be used immediately by some of our low-income housing builders and has been requested. So thank you for the work on this. I will look to my colleagues for any questions. Councilmember Newsom, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Thank you for that presentation. I think in the past when we had originally received this topic for discussion, we'd ask if other jurisdictions had participated in it and if there was any statistics on default rates.
Yes. So there is a variety of other jurisdictions that do utilize this, such as Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo and a couple other communities. And I have asked about defaults. Nobody has had a default. And I think it's generally because these aren't happening that often. These are happening with essentially one or two very large affordable housing developers. and in these larger affordable housing projects where they're long-term rental projects. And so because their terms are a lot longer than ours, and because this program hasn't been all around that long, it hasn't been time to default yet. That might be one of the things. And I know PASL's been doing it for about maybe 8 to 10 years, but still there hasn't been default yet. And their programs, it's a little bit different. They actually pay annually a little bit, and not all at once at the end. So
this is more like a balloon payment at 17 years?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Let me just clarify a couple of things with this. One is that am I correct in understanding that the general nature of these the projects that are being done are the kinds of tax credit financed projects that typically involve, say, 5 to 7 years to put together and take 6 or 8 different sources of funding, and this would be one of them?
Exactly. And when a city basically comes forward and says, we have a contribution, and this would count as that kind of contribution, it counts as a scoring on those tax credit allocation applications. So,
okay. So this would be a way for the city to make a contribution to help a project like one of those that People's Self-Help Housing has put forward without having to have, without it having to come from an impact fee on other housing?
Yes, although yes, it would have an impact on our revenue of development impact fees long-term.
Right, right, okay. And am I correct that benefit would only apply to the affordable units within a project, so that if the project is a bigger project that has a few affordable units, only those few would apply?
Exactly. For example, if we had a 100-unit project and 50 of the units were affordable, and out of those 50 units, 25 were in the very low and low income categories, which is very commonly how a project would work, only those in that very low and low income would be eligible for this, not even the moderate affordable units. So it would only cover those units that are very challenging for us to produce in our community and that we always fall behind in an arena.
Great, okay. And if it says a project that might have, a unit is essentially an independently leased apartment or bedroom, so if somebody were doing a project like we've seen that involves a couple of ADUs and a few separately leased bedrooms or independent units, would those be considered units?
So anything that's a complete unit with a kitchen is considered a unit under this scenario. But we do want to keep that minimum threshold so that we're not doing a covenant and a contract and all this work on something that's a 2 or 3 or 4 unit project, everyone all over the city and all different kinds of ownership. The real intent here is that we have a larger affordable housing project that really is one of the tax credit projects, even though we have a threshold being pretty low at 5 units.
Great. And with regard to the building these units on state property, as you mentioned, I'd ask about that in advance. Do we have proposed language that might be used so that, if for example, that project on the front lawn at Ash could go forward and be something that this deferral could be used for to make that happen faster?
Absolutely. We could simply add language that, this shall be eligible only on properties that are zoned for residential units or on properties that are under state sovereignty. That's all we'd have to say. And basically, a state sovereignty property would be a property the state owns. And so, for example, that would be the Atascadero State Hospital property. Because these properties that they're surplusing out, they're not intending to sell. They're intending a long-term lease for 100 years and maintain ownership of them, and that's how they maintain control, and that's how they're able to maintain that sovereignty and kind of go above and beyond what we have in our general plan.
Okay, so that would help the state get federal tax dollars, or the entities that the state uses to get federal tax dollars federal tax credits so that we can get the local assets we need.
Yes.
Got it. It worked for me. And what's the interest rate that we would be charging on this, accruing on this venture?
I think we had talked about 3-4%.
The staff report says 4.
Yeah, 4%. Thank you. I wasn't looking at the report. I was looking to Jerry. Sorry.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. And then a technical question in addition to the language. You know, hang on to that because I'd like to see about including that. On page 69 in the header, one of the things refers to these as affordable dwelling units. Could we change that particular title to affordable housing units instead, just so that we don't end up using the acronym ADU to have a different meaning than it usually has in other communications of the city?
Absolutely, yes, we can do that. There's nothing that that's tied to, so that's a great catch, thank you. Mm-hmm. So that's just the name of this particular program. So we can do it. We can call it affordable housing units, or we can, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you. Great call.
Yeah, I think that was a good catch because you know how acronyms creep in, and it's not good to have two of the same. So that was a good catch. I have several questions actually following up on both Councilmember Newsom and Mayor Pro Tem Funks, in regards to the state. So the state, they would be required to pay development impact fees as well, or they, the developer that they utilize to build affordable housing on their property, would normally be required to pay development impact fees? I just want to make sure they're not exempt.
That's a good question. Some of their stuff can be exempt if it's 100% affordable. I don't know if I can perfectly answer that question tonight. Some scenarios they have been exempt on these state projects. And
it sounded like you were saying, I mean, we could write the definition to include or exclude state-owned properties.
Yeah, so if it was necessary for them to pay these, or if they were going to pay them, you know, because now, for example, on a Atascadero State Hospital property, they are saying they're going to go through our regular process and our regular building process. And I thought I heard them say they were going to be paying those, but then I've heard others say that they're not, that they're exempt. So anyway, what we're trying to do with this program is make them eligible regardless for the deferment if they are indeed eligible to pay those. So
okay, and then as Mayor Pro Tem Funk alluded to, we tend to think of these projects as being done by organizations like People Self-Help Housing, but I would gather that a private developer would be eligible to participate in this if they were building a project that included at least 5 affordable for extremely low-income people.
Yes, absolutely. Now, it's not very common that we get that because it's very difficult to subsidize a project like
right.
that. But if they did do that, they'd be eligible for a pretty good density bonus or some waivers of some of their, setbacks and heights and things like that. So, and then along with this, that might be just enough to push them into supplying those units. Certainly no restriction on whether they're, you know, a private entity or big housing corporation.
And then elsewhere in our affordable housing ordinances, don't we require some ratio of, you know, moderate, low, extremely low? I mean, let's say in a larger project that's got
only
like 100 units.
And only if that project is subject to a map or a rezoning that
right.
falls into that occlusionary housing ordinance policy.
Something that requires
directive.
Council-level action.
Yeah. But if it comes in as, for example, a rental project on property that's already zoned for that and they don't have to get that level of legislative action, those inclusionary housing policy objectives that we have don't apply. And then the only ratio they have to do would be to qualify, if they wanted it, for a state density bonus.
Okay. And it leads to my other question, though, is, I mean, if a private developer were to do this for whatever reason, the incentive was such that it worked, made sense for them to do, what if they sold the property, let's say, prior to 17 years, or let's say what if someone like People Self-Help Housing, which I believe would be unusual, but what if they were to sell a project, let's say in particular if People Self-Help sold the project to a for-profit developer because they wanted to move on and do something else?
I sure hope there's good disclosure. Well, first of all, there is a covenant recorded on the property, and it's this first path of covenant. There's not only a covenant for affordability, but there's also a covenant for this fee that's due. And for a very large project, that fee is going to be pretty substantial if there's a lot of units and they have a big deferment.
Right.
So that is going to get passed on. There is no exclusion in here to have it paid off upon sale. But it's an interesting idea, and I haven't explored that potential caveat that, hey, if we have something in there that says upon sale, this, you know, full payment of all fees are due,
I guess
maybe
like
we could do that.
Yeah, I guess like you said, though, I mean, the affordability restriction is on regardless of who owns
it. It's there for 55 years, and so is the covenant for the payment of the fees until it's paid.
Got it. Okay, and I'm back on the 4% interest. In the report, in the language, it says a maximum of 4%. It doesn't say 4%. Now, I think, you know, a few years ago when interest rates were really low, charging 4% would be, you know, perhaps too much. But in today's environment, it would be too little in the sense that, you know, we, the city, and our taxpayers could be making more than 4% on that money if we had it in our hands. So there's an additional cost. Is the 4% truly a maximum that would only be charged, when interest rates are in that arena? Or would it, and why 4%? If interest rates were even higher, we would be effectively subsidizing this even further.
That's a good discussion. I think we went with the 4% because that's what the industry standard is from these other agreements, and these other communities are doing that, and that's what is palatable to the affordable housing developers right now. It is kind of an incentive that we're trying to offer to create these units. It's not something that we're trying to make a profit off of it as a city, and so we're trying to make ends meet while still getting these incentives out there. So I think it's some careful sort of balancing act with what's the appropriate interest rate. Obviously, interest rates aren't going to stay at their 7% levels now forever, hopefully. Hopefully in 2 or 3 years, they'll be back down to that 3-4%, you know, rate, I'm hoping, or else development's going to really see some changes. But you bring up a good question, and I think that is really entirely up to us as to how we want to set that. It is a little bit of a guessing game as to what's the right amount, but this didn't happen in a guess. This happened in conversations with affordable housing developers and what's working in other communities right now.
And you think you alluded to this in terms of deferred, you know, the overall deferment. The report indicates this would defer approximately $3 million in fees and wastewater capacity charges for the term of the deferment. And then the report, though, indicates that, you know, there's no particular cost to this other than the staff time for administering the program. But if we delay or if we defer $3 million of revenue for 17 years, that's $3 million of infrastructure projects we can't complete unless we borrow money from somewhere, another fund or something. But and that means that when we get around to building those projects, they're likely to be more expensive. So there actually is a kind of a further increase in cost by deferring the revenue, is there not?
Potentially, yes. Now, I guess it's hard to say how many projects are actually going to fall into this particular category, low, very low, extremely low, and actually ask for the deferment and get the deferment. It's hard to say.
Okay.
We don't expect it to be a very large number, but you bring up a good point, and it's something that some years down the line we could say, you know what, this isn't working. We are experiencing too much of a deficit. We can't entertain this program anymore.
Well,
we have that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned this as a tool, but we also use another tool. We sometimes will use money from our in lieu of fund. We'll sometimes use money from our in lieu of fund to support projects. People Self Help has asked for that, and the critical one is when an organization like People Self Help does this, these projects are exempt from property taxes.
They are,
which kind of is a huge subsidy. It further, I mean, it kind of dwarfs what we contribute out of the affordable fund. And I just want to make sure I understand that correctly, because, you know, we're stacking, you know, provision of funds on top of tax exemption, on top of fee deferral. So, in some cases, we're actually providing three tools in the box for them to go compete for affordable housing credits, right?
This is why some cities instead say, we're going to have affordable housing development impact fees to offset these costs so they can actually get an account to be able to pay these things down. So certainly, that is the other piece that we're not seeing a whole lot of right now, because those are only going to come into play, like I said, on these legislative acts where someone's rezoning a property, and we're not seeing a tremendous amount of affordable housing fees. But I think that's something that we didn't want to do at this time. We wanted to provide an incentive, and so that's where it puts us long term potentially. I think
I just want to go into this with open eyes as to, you know, that we're adding more or less in effect subsidy on top of subsidy on top of subsidy, and there is an impact on the rest of the community in terms of deferred projects, that sort of thing. So, okay, thank you.
Thanks. Most of the good questions have been asked already. On the deferment, you know, you say approximately $3 million in impact fees will be deferred over the term of the deferment. I'm trying to understand, is that $3 million a year? Because, I mean, there's going to be a deferment this year and a deferment next year and so on, and they're each, the 17 years starts that year. So I'm trying to understand how where the $3 million comes and goes.
Good question.
Director Rangel can answer.
She's feeding me great financial information. So go ahead. You can talk. Sorry.
Thank you. I believe we just took it a kind of an estimate. So we have what our RENA is saying that we need for each of those categories, and we know what the cost of the impact fee and the wastewater fee for each of those. So we said, well, we, you know, kind of in that range of what we think we could potentially, you know, guessed a little bit high on that just to be conservative, because that's what we do, and then kind of came up with that number. So that is not an annual number, that's over the course of the entire period that we're talking about. And so hopefully that helps answer that question.
Yeah, it helps a little bit. Okay. Thanks. And then just one last question. Where'd the 17 years come from? It seems like an odd number. And I'm just curious, is that a negotiable number, or is it something as industry standard, or
it is an odd number. We can do even numbers. Well, what it came from was that was the minimum amount of time that some of the housing developers said would be appropriate and acceptable for their grant applications. So we went with the bare minimum. Other communities go with a much longer term. Yeah. That's more painful for us as a jurisdiction, like we're starting to talk about the loss in revenue. So we went with that minimum end.
And Director, that's actually at the point in time where they can refinance their loan.
Oh, okay.
And so it makes a big difference. So that's kind of that minimum threshold.
Okay. Thank you, that's
that
the other
they
piece.
Needed. And yes. Then you're right, okay. We're doing
so
it at a lower term than others.
There's some, it's not just like a number pulled out of the air then, or okay, that makes sense. And actually I do have one other question also. Charles was talking about the sale. So we've got this deferment and you know, this balloon payment due in 17 years, but if the owner was to sell it, you know, 15 years down the road, you know, there certainly needs to be some disclosure that the buyer is going to be on the hook for the deferment, you know, coming up. Hopefully that would happen. If not, there would be an issue probably between the buyer and seller. But is this something that we could, I would feel more comfortable saying, look, if you're going to sell it 10, 15 years down the road before the it's due, that maybe we should put a stipulation that it's due upon sale, whether it's in 2 years or 15 years. I don't know if that's a reasonable
That
thing,
is a possibility. I think it looks like Jerry would like to speak on that. And I think, go ahead.
Good point there. I believe, definitely we would have something recorded on the deed for that. And I believe we can also put something that says we want to be notified in such case, so that we could reach out as well, so that there's no surprises. And I would assume that would be something, like you said, that would be negotiated between the parties, given that payment coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the way the banking and everything works, that the buyer hopefully would know about it certainly up front before they got to the last minute of signing on the dotted line. But that kind of thing always kind of scares me, where it's forgotten about and and then there's a big problem, and then it affects the sale and whatnot. But anyhow, all right, as long as it's, I mean, if it's an industry thing that's standard and it's not a big concern to anybody, then I'm okay with it. So, thank you.
Okay. You had another question?
Yeah, I know we're interested in this logic of getting it, you know, paid upon sale, but do we know for sure if that would if that would be still acceptable to the feds in having this impact fee be a credit to the project as a local contribution? Let me rephrase that.
I think I understand.
Okay, yeah. So
that hasn't been vetted through the affordable housing developers. I can't see why that would be an issue because they don't typically sell those projects. A smaller developer might, but I don't believe that would be an issue. But again, it hasn't been vetted.
Yeah, the issue would be whether or not our objective in this is to get these projects so that they get we get more credit for a local contribution that helps these projects get the federal tax credits that make them happen. And we won't, without layering some of that, it's why they involve 6 to 8 sources of funding. Without that, these projects don't happen. And our lowest income residents don't find any place to live. And so we don't wanna, I'm concerned about whether or not adding something that seems really logical to us, which it is, might disrupt the function of this impact fee deferment because of federal requirements that we don't know about. And that's why it might be fine with people self-help housing, but the feds might object. And that would be the question about whether we know.
And we have a follow-on.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. We don't want to defeat the purpose of the of doing it, you know, if that's a problem with whoever is the one that grants the credits. But I forgot to follow up on the question that Councilmember Newsom raised regarding delinquencies. And obviously, you know, there's nothing to do for 17 years, and these programs haven't been around for 17 years, there's nobody's defaulting, as you noted. My question for you would be, in the absence of any, you know, factual history on that, what would happen if at 17 years the organization, you know, the business, whatever, that received this deferral is not in a position to pay the fees? What, from our perspective, would happen? What's the enforceability? Or are they just going to be coming back to us and say, hey, gee, we really need to defer this for another 17 years to keep making this work?
I think it's a great question, and I think that's probably a good question for our legal team, and I don't have an answer for that tonight, to be honest with you.
Okay. Thank you.
I see our legal team on board.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much. So my observations are this, and of course, take this with a grain of salt since I am legal and not policy. With regard to any loans of this type, we would be doing both the loan agreement and it would be secured with a deed of trust against the property itself. So one of the options that the city would have would be to foreclose against that deed of trust and simply sell the property. The issue, of course, is then that property is still going to be burdened with the 55-year covenant requiring it to have affordable housing on it. I can't say sitting here tonight what kind of buyers there might be out there were it to go to a sheriff's sale, but certainly the city, for example, could be first in line for it and then make a decision as to whether or not to further sell the property or what have you. But ultimately, the property itself serves as the security for these types of liens. Yeah. You can certainly do a longer period of time, or you can negotiate with the affordable housing developer at that point or whomever is owning the property at that point. But that's legally how it would occur. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Berger.
I think that's good.
All right. Director, I have a question. There's been some conversation about, you know, say state sovereignty and allowing them to take advantage of this. I am curious if we could do something more along the lines of, if it's not zoned residential, could we use that as a lever to
bargain with the state that they do comply with zoning, and in return they would, we would rezone the property and they would receive the deferral. And I say that because, you know, we're seeing with a particular thing that we're trying to negotiate with the state that they're not being incredibly accommodating and a little bit along the, you know, we can do what we want kind of way. And I understand it. They're trying to get as much housing as possible, but we haven't seen them wanting to work with the city in terms of our zoning and you know, rules, setbacks, things like that. So I don't know what we would be able to do there, but I would be concerned about just giving them carte blanche.
We could certainly do that, yeah. And I, you know, the only issue is how would it impact that project that wants to go forward now on the state hospital property. The other thing we can do is simply rezone the property to residential, and the state doesn't have control over that, so we do. We have control over our local zoning,
yes,
even though they have sovereignty over what they can do in that zoning. So for example, if the state hospital property at the front, which is in the public zoning district, develops with a housing project, it would be in our best interest to recognize that on our zoning map anyway and to rezone that. And we can do that proactively, and you can do that essentially without the property owner's consent, but I'm sure they would, if they're going to develop it with permanent housing anyway.
Well,
you know,
my point is they don't care. They will do what they want,
yeah,
on their property. What I'm saying is if this deferral is based upon it being according to zoning, then that is a little bit of a bargaining chip that we have with the state to say, hey, we need you to comply with some of these rules. If you do, we will rezone this and you will get this deferral. But if they say, nope, we're going to do whatever we want and it really doesn't fit with what we think is really best for the city, I'm just wondering if that would be an
interesting
option.
Yeah, and then it might be an incentive for them to actually work with us because then it gives the project a better path to move forward. Interesting. Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's a conversation we can have when we go into deliberation, but I just wanted,
mm-hmm,
to see if that was a possibility.
I think it is.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions of staff before we go to the public?
Yeah, your question prompted another question.
Of course it did.
Well, regards to the zoning, in regards to approval, if we adopt this as is, or we say make some changes, come back, and we ultimately adopt this, is this going to be approved at staff level, or are these deferments going to come back to council? Is the question. And then in relationship to the mayor's question, could we not just say that, no, it has to meet the zoning unless the city council grants an exception? Therefore, you know, on a project like IE at State Hospital or on the Armory property or something, we could potentially do it, but it would be, we'd have to look at the overall terms of what was happening, the overall project, and make a decision.
I think the council's coming up with some fabulous ideas tonight. I like that. That's a good one. That's interesting. We can do that. And the other question is, you know, it's at our pleasure how we want to operate this program. So,
right. I was just wondering if your intent was, if we bless this, whether that's then going to be a staff level approval for the deferment.
The intent with this recommendation was to not have to come back to council.
Got it.
But I think if there's a change, then we bring it back to council. I think that's a good idea.
Right. Okay.
But the intent was to not come to council every time we have one of these. Not that we'll have one that frequently.
I understand. But no need to come back. But if there's going to be a change in zoning involved or something,
that could be a good idea to review it at a higher level if there is something different, like a state project. Or,
got it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And this may be a question for Jerry, but I'm curious. So if this is a staff level, which, you know, unless there's something unusual like what we're talking about, that would be my preference. When staff goes to make that determination, I'm assuming you'd be looking at the developer of the project and seeing what is their, you know, what is their history, what is their credit history, what is their reputation, all of that. Maybe you could, whether Director Rangel or Director Dunsmore speak to that.
Yes, I believe that we could do that. I don't know what extent, and so I think like Director Dunsmore was saying, we can build it out any way that we think that it would work best for us. So to the extent that we want to go, you know, more or less down that road, we certainly can do that.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, and again, this is a question prompted by other questions. If we went down this pathway of allowing for a zoning, restricting the state to these situations where the zoning is consistent with our zoning, how long does it take and how complex is the process for us to change the zoning? Doesn't that take a general plan amendment in 6 months and a bunch of dollars?
It takes a general plan amendment, but it doesn't have to be that elaborate. I mean, on a property that's going to be developed with something like that already, we would come to the Planning Commission with a request to general plan amendment zoning and straight to City Council in 3 months. It would be a lot shorter than the actual development time of the housing project itself. So, for example, if they came in and said, we need the fee deferral, and they ask us when they apply for their construction permits, the construction time of the project is about a year. And they don't actually get their deferral until the end of the project anyway. And so we have that amount of time to deal with that. And we could say, okay, you're eligible for the deferral subject to completion of the rezoning of the property. And then we could act on that.
Right, but don't they have to have the fee impact deferral in hand in order to go get the tax credit financing to get the project going?
They have to have an intent letter from the city, yes.
Right, so they would, so it wouldn't necessarily qualify if we had to do a general plan amendment and zoning. That would all have to happen first.
Well, it would be a conditional letter. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how their application would see that, but we would say, hey, upon, you know, we are, the city has, will offer you a deferral of your development impact fees upon the completion of your project and upon the completion of the, you know, amendment to the zoning of your property.
Yeah, okay.
So don't that's know. One option. I mean, yeah, you bring up a good point.
And as Councilmember Bow is suggesting, is there a way to just have it be council approval as an exception without having to go through the general plan amendment process?
Yes.
I think that's what he had said.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
That's what,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
What
I'm
suggesting. So we can come back and have this conversation when we deliberate, but yeah, that's been asked and answered. Am I seeing any other questions? I am not, so I'm going to open up to public comment. Welcome to our first speaker, and if there's anyone in Zoom, please go ahead and raise your hand.
And good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin, resident here.
Let's figure this out.
We'll try again. Okay.
All right, we've got IT on the way.
Thank you. Once again, Jeff Oslin, the discussion between the directors and council has been great. Very well thought out. I have some questions. Do we need this for arena numbers? Are we making them on our own? With Councilmember Barbeau asking the question about subsidy after subsidy after subsidy, it's also a subsidy of all the residents here. And for public works and the sewer plant or whatever it might be, we're taking funds away. So then our director's back, of course, asking for more money. So I think we have to keep those things in consideration because I hear them come back every year for raising rates for sewer and things of that nature. Pay as you go, it's an interesting option. I don't know if that works or not. Now let's take the devil's advocate, 55 years. Some folks like People Self Housing could make these condominiums and make it to where you actually could own it within 55 years, if that is how it's stated, because they've done this on other projects with housing. So what happens to those residents in owing the bill, or does any group that's doing this pay the bill? And then let's take the devil's advocate. There's only a couple of us in this room that have been
attending council meetings over the last 20 years, and I don't see many of us doing it 17 years from now. I mean, you'll still get me because I'll be a grumpy old man by then, but let's hit reality. Who's going to hold people accountable to pay a bill 17 years from now? And if you moved it on and sold it to somebody else down the line and it was held, what happens in 55 years? Do you still have to pay the bill when all the restrictions are off on the deed restrictions? So those are my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Which microphone do I use, this one or that one? The little one?
Okay. We can hear you right where you are.
Okay, thank you. Gary Kirkland on Portola Road. I'm going to throw some cold water on all this sort of thing. My position is there's no such thing as low-income housing. And I'll preface this with, whenever government gets involved in some issue, they usually make it worse, not better. And I recommend several, if you're interested in, several books. One is Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, The Law by Frederick Bastiat, and Human Action by von Mises. If you want a silly book, in my opinion, read Das Kapital by Karl Marx, or The Communist Manifesto. I think you'll get an idea of what happens when government gets involved or doesn't get involved in economics. And those first three books I recommend gave a very good argument why government shouldn't be involved. I heard on the radio this morning at KPRL that the city of Paso Robles has built some, quote, low-income apartments near Food for Less in Paso. For a two-bedroom apartment, it's $2,250 a month. For a three-bedroom home, it's $3,300 a month. That's what you call low-income housing? Paso's already gone down this road. And they're finding out, no, it isn't low-income housing. So all your efforts, I think, will fail. The marketplace will out, whatever you do, and houses will sell at whatever the market will bear, just like everything else sells at whatever the market will bear. So I think you're better off allowing people to build their houses. And as I said the last time I was here, if you don't like what your neighbor's doing, the honorable thing to do is either live with it, move away, or buy his property, or do something he doesn't like and negotiate with him. And that's what goes to zoning. By the way, this story, some of you have been around long enough to remember this. When I first moved here, the post office was right downtown on one of the West Mall or whatever, Entrada. It was a little bitty building. It was there for, and had been there for a long, long time. And then the post office decided to build a new unit down at the other end of town. And anyway, the story is they started building. This is the post office, U.S. government. And anyway, a city planner went to the site and told them, well, you didn't go through the planning commission. You didn't get all plans and all that sort of thing. And supposedly the post office worker, the construction worker said, our tanks are bigger than your tanks. We'll build whatever we want. You can go fly. Okay, now let's go to the state hospital. That's the state.
Your time is up.
Oh, sorry.
Wrap up in about 20 seconds.
Okay.
How's that?
Well, the state hospital, the same thing's going to happen. If the state wants to build something there, they'll build it, whether you like it or not, I think. They don't have to follow your zoning or anything else. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers wishing to speak on this topic? Anyone in the webinar, you can raise your hand at the bottom of the Zoom screen. You'll see a raise hand icon. You can do that. I see our treasurer, Mr. Seabach. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. I have to admit I didn't study this item in detail. I've just been listening to the discussion. So I have a question. Are you adopting this program tonight, or are you just giving general direction to staff to go back and work on it some more?
The recommendation is to adopt it, but now that we're having this conversation, we'll need to see where that leads.
Well, it seems to me like there's way too many questions. Your director was saying, oh, that's a good question, that's a good idea. Well, we could look at that. I think it's premature to adopt it under the circumstances. I would just say I do have some experience from the county side of having these low-income programs and subsidies, and there is a staff impact besides the loss of revenue that Councilman Bourbeau was mentioning. Somebody has to keep track of these accounts forever, basically. So one thing I would suggest is, yeah, you should have a due on sale provision. Some years ago, there was a really ugly mistake made in the city of Pismo Beach, where they provided ability to build low income housing down there. And the city manager, the mayor, I don't remember all, I remember the police chief, a bunch of city staff members bought these low-income properties at really discounted rates and interest and everything, and then turned around in a few years and sold them for a big profit, and the low-income nature of it went away. So you know, you need to think through these things. That was that's the worst case example that I know of. But you need to think through those, and even people self-help housing might have an instance where they want to sell a bunch of properties and go build something else somewhere else, and you want to make sure that those probably you ought to get the money then if they're going to do it. So anyway, good luck. I appreciate you. All of you had very good questions, and that leads me to believe that it needs to have another few weeks of work, if not more.
Thank you, Mr. Seebach. Anyone else in the public wishing to speak? Although we don't consider Jerry public, he's kind of one of us, but he's kind of public comment, so you know. All right, I'm seeing, is that still Mr. Seebach's hand there and the panelist? Yes, it is. Okay, so I think we're finished with public comment, unless there's one last, anyone? All right, we'll close public comment and bring that back to council. Well, I would say that is definitely worst case scenario, Mr. Seebach. We're talking 55-year deed restriction, and if necessary, we will put into the papers that no city council member may have one of those homes. Wow, not a good thing. With regards to Mr. Oslin, do we need this for RENA numbers? And that's an interesting question. We meet our RENA in terms of what we as a city are required to do. So we're required to zone for 843 total units of varying extremely low up to above moderate and everywhere in between. And that is our requirement as it comes to RENA. Now, getting those units built, we are not required to do that, but the state likes to make a lot of noise and put a lot of pressure, and there is a sense that we don't know when and if that could come down the pike. So what we are trying to do is help facilitate developers, investors that would build those units. And where we fall short is in the low income and below category. Moderate, we meet, you know, double and more. Above moderate, no problem. But it is that low, very low, extremely low, where we meet the numbers, but the numbers don't get built. So that is what we are trying to accomplish here. And, you know, to your point, to Mr. Councilmember Bourbeau's point, it is a subsidy by all of the taxpayers. If we look at impact fees to build other housing, then we'd be looking at individual homeowners subsidizing. You know, someone wants to go build a home, and now you've got a $30,000 impact fee, so you can build some low-income housing over here, which, to our other speaker's point, when government gets involved, it's hard to keep anything at a low-income level. That said, it's I think in my mind, this is the lesser of the evils, and maybe that's because it spreads it more, so we're not seeing such a large impact on individual homeowners and maybe even depressing development somewhat. Let's see, you were talking about a timeline of 55 years and who would own it, but this is a 17-year payback, so that's not so much a problem. You mentioned pay-as-you-go. Director, could you speak to that? He'd asked a question about the possibility of pay-as-you-go, and I don't know exactly what that means. Does that mean not a balloon and payments along the way, or?
I think you might have been speaking to how you said one of the jurisdictions that already partakes pays back an annual fee. Is that Paso?
That may be what he's referring to, yeah. I mean, some other jurisdictions do require annual payments starting a year after the units are occupied.
Is it a set amount or is it an interest?
I don't know the exact terms off the top of my head right now. I know that there was interest involved, but I'm not sure if it was an interest-only payment or there's an actual percentage.
And those cities have longer terms on their
Correct.
Loans. So we're looking at 17 yeah. years because here's the thing. We could go research all of this stuff and come back with more ideas. And I don't know that we need to do that, but I'm willing to try to flesh this out tonight. And if we can't, then we come back. I think you've gone through and seen that, okay, if we're looking at these kind of numbers of 3 million, we're looking at 17 years, we're looking at this 4% simple interest, this is something we can handle. You know, our wastewater treatment plant isn't suddenly not going to get built because we're doing this. We're not going to not pave roads because we're doing this. So does it pinch and come from certain places? Yes, but I don't think this is going to create any sort of real hardship on other infrastructure projects. Would I be correct in that?
That is our observation. And in fact, it's very rare that we get very low income units. It's very rare that we actually meet our RENA for those being built in any of our cycles. And I think, as Jerry mentioned, these estimates that we're seeing about $3 million are very conservative, assuming we do incentivize a lot of low and very low and extremely low units to get built in this next cycle. That is the deficit we could experience. I don't believe it to be that at that level. Right now, the projects we have on the books, the one and only that's seeking this is the Del Rio Ridge project by People's Self-Help Housing. They have missed the last two funding cycles because they weren't able to score high enough in our area because of our particulars where we are, and they need this extra element to get there, but that project itself only has 50 units, not all of which are in this particular category. Well, I think they are. A lot of them are low and very low, but
yeah.
That's pretty rare we see a project of that scale that's by a big corporation that's going to be requesting this. So
so you've given us a conservative estimate. So we're sitting here with, you know, trying to figure out the best way to help incentivize, help these projects move forward that otherwise would not, and we've seen that with these two cycles you just mentioned. The two things I see that we've discussed are the due on sale issue potential, and then, you know, Councilmember Bourbeau, I think, came up with a nice, type of wording in terms of the state that, you know, if you do this, then we'll do this, and, you know, council would approve that. So are there things other than those two that we have any sticking points on?
I have one.
Councilmember Newsom, and then Councilmember Bourbeau.
I think to protect ourselves that we do need to have council approval on any of these larger projects.
I'm sorry, Councilman Newsom, on any of which projects? Any of these?
Or? Any of these that come forward with a 17-year.
Okay, gotcha. And I certainly wouldn't object to them coming. Normally, you know, we like to give staff latitude, give them guidance, let them move, but I wouldn't object to the idea for these things to come back. Because when they come back, in most cases, it could be on the consent agenda and it could just be passed. But I would want to see the kind of language that indicated that this is only eligible for things where it complies with the zoning, underlying zoning, unless council makes an exception. When the mayor asks, do we want to, do we have any other issues, I would have kind of liked you to clarify the, excuse me, the interest rate. But I mean, I can live with, I think, 4% because we hopefully will return to an environment where maybe that's, you know, more than the current. But right now, 4% would kind of represent an additional subsidy, if you will. And I think I understand this both from your comments and from the mayor, from what the mayor said, but I want to make sure. Essentially, you're saying that $3 million is based on if we built, essentially, not just Zone 4, but actually built arena numbers for very low, that's how you get to $3 million. But if we don't, so that's a conservative estimate in the sense that it's putting a higher number out there as to the potential maximum deferral you'd see, but it's really far more likely you're going to see $1 million or $2 million in deferrals. And, and in a sense, if you reach $3 million, it would be a sign that this is really, we're really getting a lot of low and very low built.
Yes. In fact, if I run some quick math, I mean, it's 18,000 per unit, you know, roughly, right? So that would be
200, I mean,
you know, that's, you know, 100 units is 1.8 million, yeah. So that would be
180
like
or something.
Yeah, and so our whole arena for an eight-year cycle for those categories, gosh, what are those? They're much lower than that. Our whole arena for 8 years is...
Right, which did bring up a question I meant to ask earlier, and that is, theoretically, if for whatever reason people started building low and very low like crazy, and it was exceeding our arena numbers, we don't have anything in here that said, you know, this is available for the first, I don't know, you know, 137 units or whatever the magic number is. And that, would we want to keep doing that? Or would we want to say, hey, we've met our arena, you know, we've accomplished the purpose here, let's...
Yeah, we don't have a limit, but neither do we currently have the land that could accommodate that many units in Atascadero. Okay. Now with our general plan update, we might create some more multifamily land,
okay,
but probably not in those very high density categories. Okay. So that would be, it would be a challenge, yeah, to see that level of units,
okay,
to meet.
I'll
to
put that down as a theoretical concern that I don't even worry about.
But we don't have a cap in the current
proposal. But when you go 3 million divided by 18,000, you're looking at basically 167 units.
Yes. So.
And I think we need to be, arena between the two is somewhere in the 400 range, correct?
Yes, our total arena is, what, 800 and something, and then that includes our market rate units, our moderate, and our low, very low, and extremely low. I wish I had that chart in front of me. Let me just...
Isn't it 247 in...
Did I put the arena
267
chart
in the bottom categories? The low, very low, extremely low?
Yeah, it's about that.
Or the extremely low, though.
I should know all these numbers by heart, shouldn't I? I didn't put that in the report, our total arena numbers, did I? I think I did that last time.
No. Sorry, Charles and I were having a side discussion just about math. And yeah, 167 would be the number, and I think the numbers themselves are definitely higher than that. Not extremely, but they are higher, so. But anyway, I don't think we can accommodate every... Because some of those low-income units, we will get credit for the ADU policy, not to be confused with the new HDU policy. So as we sit here tonight, let's go back to this. What I'm hearing is we'd like to maybe see these come back for council approval, even if it's not in consent, but we're getting an eye on it. So it seems like maybe we would...
It depends on whether or not disrupts the ability to have this function.
I doubt very much. I understand what you're saying.
That, right,
so I think with the things that we're saying, Mayor Pro Tem Funk is right, we don't want to be holding things up. So to the extent that the things that we're saying, we mean, you know, this needs to be facilitated in a timely manner. But yes, you're correct. We don't want to hold something up. Mm-hmm. So would we have consensus to say council approval then on these items? Then the idea of some wording, and if you need us to, and this might be a question for Mr. Berger, if we need to get that wording correct tonight before we would be passing this, regards to eligible for those that are zoned zoned residential,
unless, you know, the city council made an exception. Do we need to kind of wordsmith that here, take a break, or is that something we can say, this is our intent, and you come back with the wording, or not come back with it, but you get the wording right and include that?
Madam Mayor, members of the council, I would prefer it if we came back with a resolution, just put it on consent to confirm with your discussion tonight so that we have the wording correct, rather than cobble it together in the next 15 minutes or so. Perfect. On a break. And that way it can be in front of you, and if you need to tweak it here and there, at least you have the language in front of you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then, Director, if you could check about the due on sale and make sure that that does not have a negative impact on any of these entities, that if we added that, does that then nullify the very thing that we're trying to do? And I believe we are having this as rental only, correct? Not.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I definitely would agree with that.
Ditto.
Ditto. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've got the dittos, yeah, on that.
That's
all right. Any other items that we need to put in here?
And just get the one wording change so that we're talking about.
Oh,
affordable,
yes,
housing,
the
units,
HD,
not affordable.
The HDU,
dwelling,
not the, or, yeah, AHU. We'll get that. So what we want to do is, let me go back to, we want, and so I think what Mr. Berger said is we can put this on a consent agenda, so, but the ordinance can't be introduced on a consent agenda, can it, Mr. Berger?
So what you could do is you could introduce the ordinance tonight, and I could come back for second reading with the ordinance at the same time I come back with the completed resolution, and both those items would be on a consent report.
And the,
we're coming back on consent
and
anyway.
And the second ordinance would come back with the new wording.
With the new resolution. Then
perfect.
It's clean, and then,
okay,
staff's not duplicating.
So the ordinance will
more.
Only reference the resolution. It's not going to.
Correct.
Have
it doesn't
own.
Have all those facts in it. It's a very
perfect.
Vague statement. So that's a very logical path, and our city clerk likes that too.
Perfect. I'm seeing her great. Smile big. So I will move that we introduce an ordinance to amend the municipal code title 3-14.070 to include the deferral of impact fees for affordable housing projects as an option for payment for impact fees, and then ask staff to come back at our next meeting on consent agenda, adding the items of council approval, some wording for eligible only on residential zoned property unless the city council makes an exemption, a due on sale provision if that does not dissuade or does not discount the benefit that those builders get, and making sure we are talking about affordable housing units.
I'll second.
I would second that.
All right.
And if I might be able to comment before you call the further, that just to clarify for folks that the purpose of doing this, we are layering subsidies. It is the nature of these projects that this is why they take 6 to 8 different sources of funding, that every little piece of this counts in order to be able to make the project happen. It's precisely because the market does not deliver units that people can afford if they only have Social Security to live on, or if they only have disability payments to live on, or they have, you know, a very low income job or in a lot of caretaking responsibilities. So these are folks who do not leave our community but still live here and end up becoming homeless in our community if they can't find housing, and that's where these subsidies are very explicitly directed.
All right, we have a motion by Mayor Moreno and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Wonderful, thank you. I think we did some good creative work here tonight.
Thank you.
Good team. On to, let's see, we have no management reports. So now we are on to council announcements and committee reports. And this is where the council, on our own initiative, may make a brief announcement as to maybe certain activities we've been involved in the community, or any commissions and councils and all those boards and things that we sit on. So with that, I will go from my right to my left and start with Councilmember Newsom.
I'm going to make mine simple and easy. League of California Cities is meeting next week, so we'll be in Sacramento. I'm going to do some more good work. So thanks, and you'll be missed.
Okay. The Homeless Services Oversight Council, full council, will be meeting on the 20th, and that agenda packet will be coming out at the end of this week. I would also report that I have did a tour of the jail today to better understand how that supports our community.
The only thing I mentioned tomorrow, the Integrated Waste Management Authority Board meets, nothing of particular note on the agenda, but on the 26th of September, the Board of Supervisors will consider whether they want to raise their fee to 8.1% for their residents or rejoin the IWMA. So we'll see where that discussion goes, and I'll report back on that at our next, at our September 26th meeting.
Thank you. Let's see, this Thursday, the Design Review Committee will be meeting to discuss the property at El Camino and Santa Barbara, known as Dove Creek. Next week, I have the Capsule Board meets, but I also will be in Sacramento for the League of California Cities, so I'm going to miss that meeting as well. So, and that's all I have.
Thank you. Let's see, I have the mayor's meeting. Okay, so I've got one coming up this Friday that I'm hosting, and then I had one a month ago. So we don't have these meetings for 5 weeks. All these things converge together. It was in Pismo Beach, and their police chief talked about their new public safety center, and so we kind of got a sneak preview as to what we're going to be going through over the next few years. So some good work that's been done there, and I think we have somebody on staff, our city manager, who knows all about that. So also had a fire safe council presentation, and just it's so good to see the good work, especially after we look at the Maui fires and the devastation that's occurred there, to really to know that we have, not only here in the city of Atascadero but countywide, management of fuels, of, you know, looking at evacuations, you know, prevention, all of those things, and to know that we really have that in place, and that feels good. One thing that I asked, and this is still the case, there's a particular retardant that could be used on the side of the roads to prevent when, you know, cars are driving and chains are dragging and sparking, which actually causes quite a few of the fires that we see. And Caltrans is the only agency that hasn't approved use of that retardant material. So a little bothersome there. Did have a RTA meeting last week. Nothing of an incredible note. We do have a bus rodeo coming up, but other than that, we've still got, you know, fixed ridership is still down 41% pre-pandemic, and looking at how do we get ridership up. So a lot of challenges there. And with that, I did go to a discussion panel on anti-Semitism at the synagogue, and Pastor Heather Branton, who's here this evening, she was one of the panelists. It was very well done, and I really appreciate the information for the community and all of those who came out, Jewish and not. So very, very well done. And with that, any individual determinations? All right, seeing none, meeting adjourned.